The Life and Strange Adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, Mariner, who lived many years on an uninhabited island on the coast of America, near the mouth of the great river Orinoco, having been cast on shore by shipwreck, wherein many perished, with an account how he was at last as strangely delivered by pirates. Written by himself.
I was born in the city of York in the year 1632. If ever a man was born to be his own destroyer, then I was he. Against the good advice of my father, I went to sea. I forgot the terror that possessed me in my first voyage, and voyaged into danger and calamity again. Even after deliverance from the Turks and landing safe in the Brazils, where I made my fortune, my heart still yearned to wander. But I was yet a young man.
Otra garrafa de vino, chefe!
Tell me another of your stories, Signor Robinson.
What manner of story would you have, Mr. Wells? Trading with heathens on the Guinea coast? Captured by a Turkish rover?
Tell me about trading in Africa.
There is gold dust, and it can be traded for trinkets.
What kind of trinkets?
Beads, toys, knives, scissors, bits of glass and the like. And not just gold dust, Mr. Wells. Guinea spice, elephant's teeth.
And Negroes, Signor Robinson? You can try them for trinkets?
Why is your interest so drawn to Negroes?
Signor Robinson, you must swear to keep what I say secret.
I do so swear. Now tell me what it is you have in mind.
Signor, you have done well since you arrived in Brazil. You have built up your plantation, and like the other planters, your plans for expansion are hampered by the lack of servants to help you.
True.
Supposing you had servants, as many as you desired.
What are you proposing?
Some planters have a mind to fit out a ship to go to Africa, to buy Negroes.
Such trade may not be entered into without the permission of the King of Spain or Portugal.
This would be a secret trade. There would be no public selling. The cargo would be divided up among the planters according to their investment. You would manage the trading part of the enterprise. Your reward would be a share of the cargo.
That is a fair proposal.
Of course. You may not wish to go to sea again, Signor Robinson. Why should you place yourself in jeopardy? You have wealth, prosperity...
And no one to share it with. I have but one servant, and he cannot speak more than three words. I might as well be cast away on some desolate island for all the comforts I enjoy. I work and repose in isolation.
So, you will consider our proposal?
Yes, Mr. Wells. I will.
Had I but considered judiciously. But I was hurried on and obeyed blindly the dictates of my fancy, rather than my reason.
It is indeed a fine ship.
You are certain of this enterprise?
Don't try and counsel me out of it. It is agreed. You will manage my plantation until my return, and if I should miscarry, I have made a will which you will discharge.
Take your farewells, Mr. Crusoe. The tide's full. We're about to cast off.
Thank you, Captain. Go on, Mr. Wells, or you'll have to swim for it.
Bon voyage, Signor Crusoe. And good luck. Cast off, Morris.
Cast off,
let go up. Look by me now. The cross, north and northeast.
We present Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. Dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers. With Roy Marsden as Robinson Crusoe and Tom Bevan as young Crusoe. Episode 1.
You wanted to see me, Captain?
Yes, Mr. Crusoe. By the land you can see off our port beam is Captain D'Agostino.
What is our course?
We can make northeast for the island of Fernando Noronha and then east to Africa. Or we can act with caution and return to Brazil.
Why?
The first mate has a fever.
The tossing of the ship exaggerates his delirium.
But we cannot turn back for one man.
Then turn back for all the men. A fear for the weather.
But this is just a cap full of weight.
Aye. But see the sky in the southwest. I reckon that's more than a capful. And it's coming this way.
But then run before it. Come, man, we cannot return before we've begun.
I never met a man so determined upon making his fortune.
I am intent on adventure, not gain, Captain. Next time I look upon the coast of Brazil, I shall be returning in triumph.
Very well, Mr. Crusoe.
All in the mainsail. Shorten the jib.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hurry up there. They saw those guns that last time. Come on,
the captain was correct in his judgment. That night, the ship was overtaken by a hurricane, which blew us before it for several days and nights.
Well, mister, are you satisfied now?
The storm is abating.
Well, maybe, maybe not, but we're blown miles to the north. Our ship's leaky and disabled. Our first mate's dead and the ship's boy is washed overboard. I say we must turn about and make for Brazil.
Show me a chart. What's our position?
Here, as I can measure, 12 degrees of latitude north.
And longitude?
Off the Great River, Orinoco. We need assistance, Mr. Crusoe.
Then stand off and head north.
Oh, where to?
The Caribbean Islands, Barbados. There we can gain assistance from English settlers, refurbish our ship and continue our voyage.
Ah, it is a possibility.
It is as far to go on as to return.
Very well. We are in God's hands now, Mr. Crusoe.
We set a nor' by nor'east course, but the storm's abatement did not last, and he rose up again mightier than before and carried us with the same impetuosity westward, away from our course.
What land can it be, Captain?
I know not, but that it is far out of the way of human commerce.
What has happened?
We're grounded on a sandbank. Make peace with yourself and your maker, Mr. Crusoe. The sea will break us into pieces.
Load a deck boat.
That will be overwhelmed.
But if we stay on board, the sea will destroy us.
The sea will destroy us, whatever happens.
If we take the boat, we can drive to the shore. Hear that? Lend a hand here. That's it.
Yeah.
Come on, Captain. It's worth a try.
Oh, very well. All right, lads. Climb in. Everyone ready? And commit yourself to God's mercy. Here goes. Roll for the sword before the sea pounds us into matchwood against our own hull. That's it. Keep rowing. Oh, when we get to the shore, we'll be dashed to pieces, whether it's rock or sand.
I wish I'd taken your advice, Captain.
I wish we had a sail, Mr. Crusoe, but wishes are of little use to us now.
Look! Look!
Lord, help us!
What is it, Captain?
Look behind you, Mr. Crusoe. See it now!
Mercy of heavens. It is as big as a mountain. Is that a wave?
It is the coup de grace!
Must swim. Keep swimming. Don't breathe. Must breathe. That's better. Now swim. Swim.
How long I swam, I know not. The sea raised me up and then overwhelmed me again, rushing me this way and that, until I thought I must drown.
Am I drowned? I am beached. But I may be drowned if I stay here. I must get out of the water. I must get out of the water. Mm-hmm.
sand in my mouth. Water. Oh, I have such a thirst. The storm. The storm is gone, and with it the day. And I am not drowned. Oh, happy deliverance. Happy, happy circumstance.
Cast upon a barren shore, bounded by forest and steep hills, I gave no thought to my plight. I was consumed by the joy of my deliverance. Then I remembered my shipmates, and called to them in case any were cast ashore with me.
Ahoy there! Ahoy! Oh! Is there anyone there? Ahoy!
I must find water.
My thirst plagued me and caused me such discomfort that I was driven to give up my calling and look for a stream. I walked about a furlong along the beach.
Water. Fresh water. Oh, heaven. Oh, water.
My thirst assuaged. I looked about me and considered my situation anew.
Ahoy there! Ahoy! Is there anyone there?
Can it be that all my comrades are drowned, and there is not one soul saved but me? Am I cast away alone?
It was true, for I never saw any of them afterwards, nor any sign of them, except three of their hats, one cap, and two shoes that were not fellows.
Shadows lengthen, and I am cold. My clothes are wet. I need a place to sleep out of the way of marauding beasts. One of those trees, perhaps. If I can climb high enough, I pray my pursuers lack the talent to follow me.
I scrambled up into it, though not without some discomfort, for it was prickly and ill-shaped, but finally I was wedged. I put a little tobacco in my mouth to stave off hunger, and in a short while, being excessive fatigued, fell into a deep sleep. I awoke in the morning, descended from my perch, and tried hailing my comrades again.
Hello! Hello! Ahoy!
Great heavens! The ship! Still intact! I'm stuck fast by the look of her. If we had remained aboard. The sea is calm enough today, and the ship close enough with the ebb tide to swim to her. I must try and get to the ship.
In the calm water, the distance was easy swum. The ship was stuck fast and stood high out of the shallow water. I swam round her twice, looking for a way aboard, until I spied a rope hanging down her stern.
If I can reach it... That's it. Now, climb up the side and... Over!
Ahoy! Hello! Is anyone aboard? It is I, Robinson Crusoe!
No one. I cannot delay. I must survey the ship and take what I can use. Start with the forecastle. Her head is down. By the looks of her, she's bulged. Aye, the forward hold is full of seawater, and any provisions herein spoiled. But her quarter is higher up the sandbank and may be dry. And the bread room is in the poop. Bread. Biscuit.
I crammed my pockets with biscuit and my mouth with bread and hurried on in my search, for there was no time to lose. I held open the door of the great cabin where I found rum. Mm. Mm.
Oh, that's good. Oh, what's this? Two rusty swords. Take that, you blackguard! And two fowling pieces and a pistol. I am my own army now. All I need is ammunition and powder. And a boat to get my provisions ashore. I must find a boat.
I searched the ship from stem to stern, but there was no boat to be found.
I have found what I know will be very necessary to me. And now, for want of a boat, I may lose it again. Must joy always be followed by bitterness? It is in vain to sit still and wish for what is not to be had. There are several spars lying about, and a spare topmast. I must work with these.
I flung as many spars as I could manage for their weight overboard, and lashed them fast together at both ends in the form of a raft. I then emptied three seamen's chests of clothes, and lowered them down upon my craft, and filled them with provisions.
Bread, rice, three Dutch cheeses, five pieces of dried goat's flesh and a small quantity of corn, two kegs of gunpowder, one of shot, two powder horns, the carpenter's chest, and one set of clothes. The rest I must leave behind, for I am well freighted. The sea is smooth and calm. The tide is rising and setting into the shore, and what wind there is blows in my way. So I must set to paddling.
I made landfall in a small creek and landed my cargo safely, though it took much effort. I constructed a tent out of a tarpaulin and stowed my perishables inside. Then I built a barricade of my chests and kegs around it.
I know not whether this land is continent or island, inhabited or full of wild beasts. I shall climb to the ridge behind the beach and then the steep hill beyond, which should afford a view of the country.
I climbed for some time and with great labour and difficulty got to the top. There, for the first time, I spied the extent of my domain.
So, my hermitage is an island, environed every way with the sea, and as it would seem, barren, except for myself and wild beasts, of which I have seen none. Still, there is an abundance of fowls, whose kinds I know not, and which may or may not be eaten. The sun is low. I should return.
I walked back down to my camp and held a council of my thoughts.
The ship is my salvation, but the first storm that blows will break her in pieces. I must set aside all other tasks until I have got everything out of her that will be useful to me. Heavens, look at that great bird perching. I may discover whether it is eatable or not. Hold still, my beauty, while I take aim. Bless my soul. I do believe it is the first gun fired on this island since the creation of the world. It will not be the last, God willing. Now, what kind of creature have I killed? Looks like some kind of hawk.
Thus cheered, I wended my way back to my camp, which was, as I had left it, unmolested, apart from two hares which ran out of the tent as I approached. I plucked my hawk, roasted it over a fire, and ate it, washed down with rum.
Mm. Oh, that is good. Well, perhaps I may prosper here after all. Yes, perhaps I shall.
The foolishness of my optimism was revealed to me as I lay down to sleep. The darkness was full of strange noises, and I was exceeding lonely. I could not help but reflect both on the willfulness that had brought me hither, and my father's strictures, which in my youth I had ignored.
Why, Robinson, are you so set on such a course?
I do not know why, Father. I just know that my heart demands that I go to sea.
The sea is for men of desperate fortunes who go abroad and make themselves famous in undertakings out of the common road.
But that is what I want.
Yours is the middle station, Robinson, which I have found by long experience is the best station in life.
I do not wish for the middle station, Father. I desire adventure.
Listen to me. I left Bremen and came to England and settled down. I changed my name from Kreutznauer to Crusoe and made a good life here.
Yes, I know, but that was an adventure.
The calamities of life are shared among the upper and lower part of mankind, but the middle station, that has the fewest disasters. The least vicissitudes. Yeah, they are not subjected to so many distempers and uneasiness, either of body or mind, as those who live viciously.
But I am unhappy to remain as I am.
If you go to sea, you will be the most miserable wretch that ever lived. You will break your mother's heart. I beg you, as a father, do not play the young man. I will do well for you and help you if you stay here.
And if I do not?
God will not bless you. I gave the same advice to your brother, but he went away and was killed. To what purpose?
All right, Father. I am persuaded. I shall not go against your wishes.
You promise that you will not go abroad?
Yes. I promise, Father.
Then I will tell your mother directly. Molly! Molly! The boy is seen sense at last! Molly!
How often have I reflected upon that discourse? My father had spoken his piece, and for him the matter was closed. Sometime afterwards, I spoke to my mother.
Oh, Robinson, you would try the patience of a saint.
Can I help it if my thoughts are so entirely bent on seeing the world?
Yes, you can.
Mother, I am now 18. It is too late for me to go apprentice to a trade or clerk to an attorney, and if I did, I should never serve out my time.
How do you know? You've never tried it.
I shall never settle to anything with resolution enough to go through with it until I have experienced my desire. Speak to my father.
He will not listen.
If he were to consent to just one voyage, that's all. Just
you
one.
You will break his heart.
And when I come home, if I do not like it, I promise I will never go to sea again and will work doubly hard to recover whatever progress I may have lost ashore.
It is of no purpose to speak to him.
Just ask him. Please?
He knows very well where your interests lie, and so do I. You will never have our consent to your hurt and ruin. He loves you very much, you know.
I'm sorry, Mother.
He was so pleased when you said you would not go. He laughed and gathered me in his arms and swung me round.
It's all right. I won't go. I swear.
You don't mean it.
I do. I do.
But my resolve waned as before. I broke my promise and their hearts, and went to sea. And as a consequence of ignoring their good advice, I was cast ashore on my desert island, with little comfort and less hope. I spent the next few days on my island as I had planned on my journey down from the hilltop. I visited the ship and plundered every usable thing. By the 13th morning, I had been 11 times on board and was bent upon going another, but the sky was hazy and a wind blew. Still, it did not deter me. When the tide was ebbed, I made my way aboard, and although I thought I had rummaged every cabin, still found a locker with four drawers that I had missed before.
Hello. What's this? Oh, knives. Good ones by the looks of them. And fork? I shall be able to entertain my guests most royally. Three razors and a pair of large scissors. Well, three drawers and three finds. So, what of the last drawer? Money. Oh, drug, what are you good for? European coin, some Brazil, pieces of eight, some silver. One of these knives is worth all this heap. Useless. May as well leave it here. But it is money after all. It may be of use someday. Now, to make my raft.
That night I lay in my tent with my wealth all around me, but did not sleep much. The wind blew very hard, and the rain fell in torrents, and in the morning...
The ship is gone. I am truly alone. I must find a place where I can secure myself against attack. This camp is no good. Too close to the sea and too far away from fresh water.
I climbed the ridge and found a little plain on the front of a small hill.
Bounded at the rear by a sheer face, like a house side, and with a small hollow at the base, like the entrance of a cave. The plain provides a good view of the sea, and facing nor-nor-west. It will shade me from the heat of the day. This shall be my castle.
My first endeavour was to construct a stockade made from stakes driven into the ground and lashed together with cables from the ship. The entrance was not by a door, but by a short ladder which could be drawn up from the inside like a drawbridge. Inside my compound, I built me a large tent but a smaller one inside. Into my large tent, I brought all my supplies. When this was done, I cut into the rock of the hillside and enlarged the hollow so that it became a cave and used it as the cellar to my tent. I did not spend all my time upon this work. Each day I went abroad with my gun, as well to divert myself as to see if I could kill anything fit for food, and to explore and survey my island. This regularity of activity did not apply to my thoughts, which plunged into misery and soared into hope with great suddenness and frequency.
Damnation! Cast away on a desert island all alone, such misery must be a determination of heaven that I shall spend all my life here in this desolate place. My father was right. What is that? Sounds like... It is. A goat. It's a goat. Here, goat. Come to Robinson. Here. Come to Robinson. Come here. Come here. Damnation. Come here.
I ran after it, but it was too swift and sure-footed. But the discovery cheered me and caused me to reflect again.
Yes, I am in a desolate situation. But remember, 11 shipmates went into that boat. Where are the 10? Why were they not saved and you lost? What would be my case if I had to live in the condition in which I first came ashore? Indeed. I should give thanks to God as I return to my castle.
To help my reason master my despondency, I took pen and parchment and drew up my state of affairs in writing, setting good against evil in the form of a ledger.
Now, on the evil side of my ledger, I am cast upon a horrible desolate island, void of hope and recovery. But, on the good side, I'm alive and not drowned as all my comrades were. On the evil side, I am singled out and separated from all the world to be miserable. But on the good side, I am singled out and spared, and he that saved me can deliver me from this condition. I am banished from mankind, but I am not starved or without sustenance. I have no soul to speak to or relieve me, but God wonderfully preserved the ship, so I could get so many necessary things as will either supply my wants or enable me to supply myself for as long as I may live. So,
Although I am in distress, I am well preserved with what I require for my survival. And I think I can say that there is no condition in the world so miserable, but that we may always find something to comfort ourselves from, and be thankful for. What's that? Lightning? If it hit my tent, I may survive, but not if it hit my gunpowder.
My gunpowder was stored in two large barrels side by side under a tarpaulin outside my cave. The possibility of its combustion spurred me into action.
I must separate the barrels. Without gunpowder, I would perish.
The night and the following day were spent in a fever of activity. I separated the barrels, and then powder from each barrel, laying a little and a little in parcels which I hid, some in my cave, and some up and down in dry holes among the rocks, so that whatever might come, it might not all take fire at once.
My father was right. I am the most miserable wretch that ever lived. I wish I had never put to sea at all. Never boarded that gangplank in Hull so many years ago.
How now, young Bob? I warrant you're feeling frighted.
I'm dying, Jack.
Dying? From what?
I have a terrible sickness.
Oh, you're just getting your sea legs, that's all. Every sailor goes through it.
This is different. It's worse than seasickness.
Have you ever been ill from the sea before?
You know this is my first voyage.
And then how would you, a freshwater sailor, know what is correct and what is false?
I know that I have never been so ill in all my life.
I warned you, but you would not listen. So keen were you to come on board.
I swear that I shall never go to sea again if God spares me.
He will spare you, Bob.
The wind blows like a demon, and I've never seen the sea so high. It must surely overwhelm us.
This is nothing but a capful of wind, Bob.
A capful? It is a terrible storm.
Give us a good ship and sea room, and we sailors think nothing of a squall of wind like this, Bob.
Oh, it can be worse than this.
Much, much worse. You'll see. You'll feel better in a couple of days.
Well, Jack may have lost his reason, but I have not.
The wind blew all that day, and I remained wretched. By the next morning, I felt improved. The wind began to ease, and with it my torment. Evening brought a sunset across a calm, clear blue sea.
Well, Bob, how do you feel now?
Better, Jack. Much better.
And how do you like the sea now?
I don't think I've ever seen anything so beautiful as this sunset. How can it change so quickly?
Ah, that's the sea for you. Charming one moment, raging the next. Still set on giving it up and going back to your father?
I never said that.
Oh, I think you did. You were praying with all your might, you were that frightened.
I wasn't.
You thought you were dying.
I didn't really.
Can you stomach some punch? Or is your belly still too sore?
Give it here.
Hold your horses, Bob. Let's have a toast before we drink.
To what shall we toast?
Fair wind and a calm sea.
Aye, then.
To a fair wind and a calm sea.
So I drank the punch and went the old way of all sailors and was made drunk. And in one night's wickedness drowned all my repentance. The sea was returned to its smoothness. The hurry of my thoughts was forgotten, and the current of my former desires returned. In short, with drink and companionship, I forgot my prayers and made as complete a victory over conscience as any young fellow could desire. Some months after the fever of my gunpowder separation, I made a startling discovery on my way back from hunting.
What are those green shoots? What? It looks like barley. Growing here, outside my stockade. 12 years. It is very like English barley. Maybe God has miraculously caused this grain to grow without seed purely for my sustenance. Can this be so? That he would cause such a miracle to occur on my account? Good Lord, forgive me, for I have ignored you and your commandments.
For several days I believed I was blessed by Providence and wandered over those parts of the island I had been before, looking for other storks.
It is strange. The only corn I have found is outside my stockade. Hold still, my beauty. Robinson needs you for his dinner. What's that? A young kid. Oh, I must have shot its mother. Oh, it is too young. I must put it out of its misery. Oh, damnation. My powder sack is empty. Go away. Go away. Shoo.
Despite my attempts to frighten the young goat, it followed me all the way to my stockade, where it started to examine my barley.
Get away from there, or I'll shoot! Get away!
I shouted at the poor animal, waving my gun and powder bag, the more to frighten it. Then it dawned on me.
I filled this sack when I split up my powder store after the lightning. I remember, it was empty except for a few rotten husks, which I shook out over the wall of my stockade. And those rotten husks became my miracle. So that's it. And I thought it was divine providence.
I carefully saved these ears of corn and resolved to sow them in the next season, hoping in time to have enough to supply me with bread. The 12 grains of corn should remain unspoiled and grow when all the rest were destroyed was really the work of Providence. And in truth, I ought to have been as thankful as if it had been miraculous. Neither did I give thanks for the kid that followed me home and became tame. I ignored the lessons of Providence as I had before, when I forgot the terror of my first voyage and sailed on into more terror.
What are you doing, Jack?
Writing to me, sweetheart.
In the midst of a storm? What do you write?
My goodbyes. I may never see her again.
Why are you so concerned?
I do not like this weather.
But we ride at anchor off Yarmouth Roads. Surely we are safe here.
The wind is onto the shore and very strong. We may be driven from our anchorage at any moment and dashed onto rocks.
So this is more than a capful?
Much more. I fear I shall not survive it. Hello? What's that?
All hands on deck! All hands on deck! All hands to the pumps!
What's happening?
The captain's slipped anchor.
Why?
The white colliers are running before the wind. The captain's worried they'll dash against them. He's firing a gun to warn people and sure about distress.
Heavens.
We've sprung a leak in the main hold. All hands on deck!
Aye, aye, mister.
You too, Bob.
I helped pump and did so heartily for a long time.
Abandon ship!
Come on, Bob! The ship has been driven onto the rocks! We'll be lost with it if we do not hurry!
We abandoned ship and rowed towards the shoreline. We had not been more than a quarter of an hour out of our ship than we saw her founder. But we made the shore safe and were made most welcome by those Yarmouth people who took us in. Next day, refreshed and fed, I met with Jack in the tavern.
Why, Jack, are you not elated? You'll see your sweetheart again.
Do you go home to York, Bob?
No, I shall travel on to London and find me a new ship.
You ought never to go to sea again. You ought to take this for a plain token that you are not to be a seafaring man.
Why, Jack, will you go to sea no more?
My father and all my family are seafarers. It is my calling and my duty.
Then maybe it is mine.
You made this voyage for a trial. Heaven has given you a taste of what to expect if you persist.
But I have this strange passion to go to sea, despite all reason to the contrary.
And perhaps this has befallen us because of you, Bob. Go back to your family and forget the sea.
I cannot.
I would not set foot on the same ship as you again for £1,000.
Had I now had the sense to go home, my father would have killed a fatted calf and I had been happy. But shame opposed the best motions, and I thought I should be laughed at by my neighbours and friends for the failure of my enterprise. Since then, I have often observed how irrational is the common temper of mankind, viz., that we are not ashamed to sin, and yet we are ashamed to repent. More than 20 months had passed since my deliverance. With the aid of my ledger, having brought my mind a little to relish my condition, I began to make things as easy to me as I may. I set to enlarging my cave. I shored the roof with timber struts from the ship. I covered my stockade with rubble so that from the outside no man would see that it was inhabited. I made large shelves and hooks and ordered my possessions. These tasks completed, at the end of each day I sat upon my new chair at my rough table and began to write a journal.
Every morning I walk out with my gun for 2 or 3 hours if it does not rain, then employ myself to work till about 11 o'clock. Then eat what I have to live on, and from 12 to 2, lie down to sleep, the weather being excessive hot. And then in the evening, to work again, and finally here, to my table, to write my journal until darkness, which is upon me, so I must stop. What is that? It is stopped. My roof so weak. I don't know, because I cannot see in this dark. Tomorrow I shall collect the tallow from the goat I shot yesterday and make a candle. It comes again. I do not like this. The whole mountain is collapsing into my cave. I must get away.
I scrambled over my wall and onto the plain and watched in terror as stones and boulders cascaded down the mountain.
Even the ground is shaking. Oh, my heavens! What have I done? It comes again. Oh, I shall be destroyed and all my possessions.
I ran around, most excited at the thought of my dwelling and everything I owned being buried. After the last shock had faded, I sat alone on the plain, and my spirits fell very low.
I may never live there again. The wind blows a hurricane. The sea is very enraged, and now the heavens open to spill a torrent upon me. All the elements are ranged against poor Crusoe.
I sat in the storm for a long time, so great was my fear, until my shivering drove my thoughts to become more rational.
It must have been an earthquake. If I go back into my tent, I may escape the storm.
I crept back into my tent, but the rain was so violent that my tent was ready to be beaten down with it, and drove me back into my cave.
But it could fall on my head at any moment. Oh, I do not like this. But I can get dry and warm. Oh, my cave is turning into a lake. There is water around my feet. Rainwater, which cannot escape because of my new fortification. Damnation!
I was compelled to make a hole in my new wall to let the water out, which I had to hurry at, and which made me wet all over again. Finally, the work was done, and I returned to my cave.
The mountain seems to have regained its composure. I will have a sup of rum to fortify my spirit. Not too much, Crusoe. There is no more when 'tis gone. If the island is subject to these earthquakes, then I cannot live in my cave anymore.
I lay down on my bed, but my apprehensions made sleep impossible, and I listened to the rain. The next morning the rain was unabated, and I did not go hunting. I ate some bread and grapes.
It is unusual chilly. I am cold. My bread store is low, which is another dismal consequence. I suppose I must reduce myself to one biscuit cake a day. Oh, what a miserable place this is. Cold. Yet I sweat like a style horse on a summer's day. To be sick and have no help. Please, Lord, do not forsake Robinson now.
I tried to pray, but I didn't know what I was saying. I slept fitfully and woke with a terrible ague. The fit held me for several hours, and I had a most terrible headache. I was so weak and very thirsty, yet I had not strength to stand up or get myself any water to drink or food to eat.
Oh, it stopped raining. The sun is high. Oh, I must have slept a long time. I feel better. I shall go hunting later. What was that? I thought I saw someone. Must have been a reflection from the sun.
Robinson Crusoe.
Who are you?
Robinson Crusoe.
What are you doing on my island?
It is my island.
What do you want?
All the things I have shown you have not brought you to repentance.
What things?
Go to sea and you will know true unhappiness. God will not bless you. Of that you may be certain.
Father?
Your father knows very well where your interests lie, Robinson. How can you repay him so?
Mother! Are you here too?
You broke her heart.
I won't go. I swear.
You broke your promise and both our hearts.
How now, Bob? I warrant you're frighted.
Jack? Is that you?
You ought never to go to sea again.
I have this passion which I will not give up.
I would not step foot on the same ship as you again for £1,000. Farewell, Bob.
Jack! Don't go!
The first mate is sick with fever. There is a storm coming. We must turn back, Mr. Crusoe.
No, we cannot turn back for one man.
Ah, I never met a man so determined upon making his fortune.
Set your course, Captain. Let the storm do its worst.
And all were lost, save you.
I am sorry.
You have begged for mercy and sworn oaths and never kept but one.
I do repent.
All these things have not brought thee to repentance. You must pay for your sins, Robinson.
What can I do?
You can die.
Was it dream, nightmare, or revelation? My fever still rages, and I am too corrupted to know. I must drag this water barrel nearer to my bed, so that if I am overcome again, I shall not suffer so much from thirst. It is my own fault. I turned my back on all who loved me. I ignored Providence. I left my mother and father to mourn over my folly. Now I am left to mourn under its circumstances. When the ship was preserved long enough for me to take what I required, did I give thanks? No, I did not. The growing of my corn had some influence upon me, but only as long as I believed it to be a miracle. It is done.
I lay down, and despite being delirious for the first time in many years, I prayed truly and with humility.
Lord, be my help, for I am in great distress. I don't want to die alone and wretched.
I slept fitfully and woke refreshed. The ague had gone, yet every bone ached with its memory. I took my gun, intending to go hunting, but I could get no further than the seashore before I had to sit down.
I would shoot one of those seals, but I have not the strength to lift my gun. Strange creatures they are, free of doubt or conscience. Where did they come from? Who made them? It must be God. And if God guides and governs everything, then nothing can happen without his knowledge. Therefore, he has appointed all this to befall me. But why? Because of your misspent life. The why is, why were you singled out? Why were you not destroyed long ago? That is the why.
I walked back to my cave, still very low and concerned at my condition. I began to look for some tobacco I'd taken from the ship, thinking it might assist my distemper.
Now, where are we? Here. A book?
Not just any book. A Bible. Still holding the tobacco, I opened it and was immediately arrested by what I read.
Call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver, and thou shalt glorify me. Most apt to my condition. Can God deliver me from this place?
I broke off some tobacco and began to chew. Then I sat down and read on, and the words made a great impression upon me, as indeed did the tobacco which half stupefied my thoughts. That night, I fell into a sound sleep and did not wake until noon, when I found myself exceedingly refreshed. I went out and shot a fowl, which I cooked and ate, and afterwards fell to contemplation.
God says he will deliver me, but deliverance from this island is exceeding unlikely. But if nothing is impossible for God, how may I be delivered? He will send a ship. There is no other escape except death. And he has spared me thus far and given me sustenance. Is that it? I have already been delivered. I have what I need, and I am spared. I have ignored the deliverance I have already received. God has saved me, and I have not glorified him.
I fell to praising God and giving thanks for my preservation.
I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains, from whence cometh my help.
Over the next few days, my strength returned, and with it my spirits. I made a post where I could mark out a calendar of the days on my island, noting every seventh as the Sabbath, which I kept as a solemn fast, and spent my time prostrating myself before God, praising him and reading scripture.
A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead.
My life of hunting and manufacture became more measured. I found time for diversion. I caught a young parrot which had kept in a makeshift cage and resolved to teach him to speak.
Pretty Polly! I've brought you outside today, Paul, because I, being invested by the Almighty, as it were, governor of this island, have declared it a holiday. Why? Because it is the 5th anniversary of my landing here. And even though my way of living is no better than last year, having found God, I have great comfort within. Now, parrots may live as long as humans. So you and I will grow old together, Paul. God willing. Robinson Crusoe.
Time passed. I explored my island, mapped its potential. I found fruit and wild tobacco. I fished, shot fowl, and managed a small herd of goats. I made parts of a rude but usable kind. My life was pleasing and without surprise.
How now, Paul? I've been gone a few days. Have you missed me?
Crusoe.
What's that?
Crusoe.
You spoke, Paul. You spoke. You spoke, Paul. The first voice I've heard in years.
The years sped swiftly, but reconciled to my solitude, I now enjoyed my isolation. After all, I was master of all I surveyed. By the reckoning of my days, 25 years of my exile had passed, when I happened upon that which wrecked the ship of my serenity, as surely as the storm that had cast me ashore. It cannot be. Toes, heel, in every way the print of a man's naked foot in the sand. Just one, and no other, and no sign of a boat. Oh, do they live here? How many? They may be watching. I must hide. I must get back to my stockade. Hurry!
In Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe, dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers, Crusoe was played by Roy Marsden. Young Crusoe was Tom Bevan, Senior Wells, Gerard McDermott, the Captain, Christopher Wright, and Jack Ewan Thomas. Crusoe's father was John Rowe and his mother, Jenny Lee. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancaro. The second part of the life and strange adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, mariner, who lived many years on an uninhabited island on the coast of America, near the mouth of the great river Orinoque, with an account how he was at last as strangely delivered by pirates. Written by himself.
If ever a man was born to be his own destroyer, then I, Robinson Crusoe, am he. Against the good advice of my father, I went to sea. I forgot the terror that possessed me in my first voyage and sailed into danger and calamity again. Even after making my fortune in the Brazils, my heart still yearned to wander, and I set sail on an illicit voyage to buy Negroes. I heeded not the captain's warning of a storm, but pressed on.
I say we turn the boat and make for Brazil.
It is as far to return as to go on. Head north for the Caribbean islands.
Very well, Mr. Crusoe. We are in God's hands now.
God did not spare us. That night we foundered upon a sandbank close to a rocky shore, and we were cast into the sea. I managed to swim to the shore, but all my comrades were lost. With supplies scavenged from the wreck of the ship, I made my home in a small cave at the base of a cliff. I discovered my haven was an island bounded by sea, without human inhabitants or savage beasts. At first, all my thoughts were of escape, but in time I learned to acquiesce in the dispositions of Providence. The years sped by. My life was pleasing and without surprise. I enjoyed my solitude. By my reckoning of the days, 25 years of my exile had passed, when I happened upon that which wrecked my serenity as surely as the storm that had cast me ashore. It cannot be. Toes, heel, in every way the print of a man's naked foot in the sand.
Just one, and no other, and no sign of a boat. How? Do they live here? How many? They may be watching. I must hide. I must get back to my stockade. Hurry!
We present Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. Dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers. With Roy Marsden as Robinson Crusoe and Tom Bevan as young Crusoe. Episode 2.
Raise the ladder. Make sure all my guns are loaded and ready. We besiege
damnation.
Damnation it is, Paul. Who owns that footprint? Can it be Satan himself come to tempt and torment me? For how could any human thing come to this lonely place and then leave just one footprint? But if it's a man, is he alone? Or with a band of fellows who will destroy my corn or eat my goats? Do they settle? Or are they visitors?
On my perambulations in calmer times, I had observed on clear days a great landmass some 10 leagues to the west, which I presume must be the coast of America, somewhere near the mouth of the great river Orinoco.
If they have been once, they will return in larger numbers and overwhelm me. And if they do not see me, they must find evidence of my presence, my corn, my candle. From now on, our evenings must be endured in darkness, Paul. Tonight I shall sleep with my sword at my side, a dagger and a pistol under my pillow. How strange a checkerwork of providence is the life of a man, Paul. Today we love what tomorrow we hate. Today we desire what tomorrow we fear. They even tremble at the apprehensions of. Well, good night. Though I don't suppose I shall sleep much this night, or any night from henceforth, Paul. They may not kill me. I may be taken prisoner and used as a slave in some dreadful manner.
It happened before, when I was still a young man. I was in charge of a merchantman just out of the Canary Islands, bound for the coast of Africa.
Pass me a glass, Mr. Crusoe.
Aye, Mr. Mate. Can you make her out?
She's coming this way, fast. Have a look yourself.
Strange-looking craft. With a shoulder of mutton mainsail. Ever seen a vessel like that before?
Aye. I once saw a captured Turkish rover out of Saleh. Up just like that.
Crowd on all the canvas we can!
Pirates! You think we can run before them?
Oh, we can try. Loose those yards, lads, get a move on!
The Turkish rover at the abyss!
They're still gaining on us.
We've run before them these 5 hours, Mr. Crusoe. They'll be upon us well before dark.
Do pirates take prisoners, Mr. Mate?
Depends on how vexed they are.
The African coast is 2 days hence, and the Turk bars our passage to the Canary Islands.
Can you count their cannon, Mr. Crusoe?
1, 2... I make 9.
9 each side, 18 in all, and we have 12.
6 a side. You mean to fight?
They do. But if we're sly and shorten our foresails, which the Turk cannot see,
we will slow down.
Aye, I'm thinking we may be able to spring a surprise upon those devils.
They will overhaul us. I do not see your purpose, Mr. May.
Look, in their haste, they may be induced to come athwart our beam, where we may get off a broadside at them before they know it.
And we may sink them.
Ah, possibly. Gunnar! Unship our cannon! Load them ready for firing!
Aye, aye, mister!
They're almost upon us, Mr. Crusoe. Let's pray that she takes the bait and comes athwart our starboard side.
Every man is armed and ready, but out of sight. It's working, Mr. Mate.
Come on, my beauty. A little more. Wait for it.
By heavens, there must be 200 of the devils.
Wait for it.
Fire!
There are. We caught them. We did it.
Keep down. They're firing back.
Their aim is short.
Not that short, Mr. Crusoe.
Fire again!
They're cheering up, Mr. Mate.
Keep down!
They'll be back for their prize. Rest assured.
Right. They're coming about.
Yeah, they won't make the same mistake twice. This time they'll come at us head on. Try and ram us.
Heaven preserve us.
Stand by to repel boarders! Let them have it with every bit of small shot we've got! Look lively, lads!
Here they come!
The rover hit us astern and landed about 60 devils upon our quarter, who immediately fell to hacking our masts and our rigging. Outnumbered 5-1, we fought for our lives with guns, cutlasses, half pipes, powder chests, anything that came to hand.
Sword, Mr. Crusoe. We're obliged to yield.
Stop firing, lads!
We cannot give up!
Look, 8 of our men are killed, 20 wounded, and our ship is disabled beyond repair.
Cease fire! Hold your fire!
The days after the discovery of the footprint were a turmoil of doubt and fear. I hid in my cave, too frighted to venture forth, except on brief excursions. I never went without my gun, although I did not use it for fear of alerting my enemies, but took to snaring game and fishing. Each morning, I climbed the hill behind my cave and spied my island, always looking towards the west to see if there were any visitors. I see it clearly now. The footprint was a vision sent to be a test of my faith. For what mortal man can leave one footprint on an entire shore? Fear of danger is 1,000 times more terrifying than danger itself. The summit. The air is good and fresh. The sun shines, the sea is perfect. My island is a Garden of Eden. It was my custom on these occasions to check the horizon for ships. As I swung my glass around, I was suddenly startled. Smoke. Coming from my side of the island. I've made no fire today. If that is made by men, they are close to my castle. I must discover the situation. I hurried back down the hill in great haste until I came to a clearing in front of my stockade where I could get a better view. 9 naked savages dancing round a fire, which is not for warming them, for the day is extreme hot. 2 canoes hauled upon the shore. I sat and watched them for an age, concerned lest they discover me, but they were too impassioned on their own activity and did not leave their beach. Their fire must be for cooking, but I can see no game of any sort. Curious. Oh, something's happening. Are they going? Yes, they're pushing their canoes into the water. Strange. I count but 8 bodies where I counted 9 before. I watched them paddle away, all the time in high spirits. Then I went down to the place where they had been. Blood. Bones. A hand. A human skull. 9 came hither, 8 left after eating and devouring their fellow with great merriment and sport. Cannibals! I was so overcome with indignation that I ran about in a fury, full of murderous revenge. When my energy was spent, I hurried back to my cave and pulled up my ladder and made all things without look as wild and natural as I could. My indignation remained, however. I never thought to see butchered human flesh fresh off the spit, or smell the stench of it. Load my fowling pieces with swan shot.
my pistol with four bullets, and two lead slugs in my musket. If I shot when they're close together, I may see off several at once, and with surprise, maybe six or seven. But supposing they sent another crew to look for the first? I may kill 10, 20, 50, and still they may come, and I will be no less a murderer than they are man-eaters. And perhaps much worse. And suppose I were to fall into their heathen hands, Paul? I think I know what may become of me then. Aye, Paul. For many days, I lived in a military manner, patrolling at dawn and dusk, carrying my arsenal with me, until at length my passion waned. One evening, returning from my patrol, I held a council of my thoughts. These savages have been suffered by Providence to have no other guide than their own abominable and vitiated passions. And Crusoe has set himself up as judge and executioner on his island. But by whose authority? These people do not commit this as a crime. They do not know it to be an offence and then commit it in defiance of divine justice, as we do in almost all the sins we commit. Come now, Paul. These cannibals may be brutish and inhumane, but they've done me no injury. Therefore, Paul, it would be unjust of me to fall upon them. If I may not kill these savages, perhaps I may leave them. Escape, Paul. That's my new intention. I accomplished it before when my ship was captured by Turkish pirates all those years ago.
We were taken as prisoners into Saleh, a port belonging to the Moors, where my change in circumstance from merchant to slave, cheerful to melancholy, was completed. The usage I had at the hands of my captors was not so dreadful as at first I apprehended, nor was I carried up the country to the Emperor of Morocco's court, as the rest of our men were.
Why is your mouth turned down, English?
I do not like being your slave, Captain.
You will teach me to speak English like a Christian.
What need does a pirate have to speak English?
I speak many languages. It is useful in my profession.
Will you take me with you on your next voyage?
No. When I am away, you shall tend my garden.
What if I try to escape?
To the north and east, there is the great desert. To the south, impenetrable jungle full of wild beasts and savage tribes. And to the west, the ocean. Escape is impossible.
I see.
And I see a dangerous look in your eye, English. If you are caught trying to flee, we will fill your mouth with sand and you will die. So think no more of escape, eh? You are a gardener now.
But escape was all I thought of. Although nothing presented itself to make the supposition of it rational. Then after 2 years, an odd circumstance put the old thought back into my head.
We are here, English. Come, bring those baskets with you.
Yes.
There. Well, what do you think of her?
I cannot see.
Then put your burden on the dock and look.
My longboat.
With some refinements, no?
Indeed.
I was presented with my former ship's longboat, newly fitted out with a mast and a small stateroom like that of a barge, and a place to stand behind it where a man may haul home the mainsheet.
It is very fine.
And look, English, a compass to plot our course.
Where are we going?
Fishing in the bay. Now, bring the provisions aboard and let us get underway.
The captain used these trips constantly, once or twice a week if the weather was fair. I grew to like him. But the idea of escape was never far from my thoughts. Confident of his safety, my patron left a fowling piece aboard and many times shot fowl with it. I was frequently sent ahead with the supplies, and I took the opportunity to conceal extra water and biscuits under the bed in the stateroom.
We are a long way out today.
There is better fishing out here.
Bigger fish, yes. It is fitting.
Why is it fitting, Captain?
This is my last trip, English. Tomorrow I set sail on a new voyage to plunder Christian treasure.
You have fitted out your ship, then?
I had a ward from the Emperor.
I see.
We must start back. I have things to prepare. You must become a gardener again, no?
No. Yes. Oh, look!
What is it?
A fish on my line. A big one.
Take the killer. Give me your line. Hurry, English, or we will lose it.
As he grabbed hold of my line, I stepped behind him. The moment he saw the line had nothing on it, he half turned to me, his eyes full of surprise. This was my moment. I seized him by the waist and tipped him overboard.
No, English! 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 Do not leave me here!
Get away from the boat, Captain!
You will go all over the world with your English. I will be your slave. Do not leave me here. I beg you. I will drown.
He swam like a cork and would have reached me very quickly, so I ducked into the cabin, took up the fowling piece and presented it to him.
I have done you no hurt, Captain, and will do you none if you stay quiet and swim to the shore.
I have treated you well.
The sea is calm. Make the best of your way to the shore.
You know what will happen if you are caught.
Aye, but if you come near to the boat, I will shoot you through the head. But I am resolved to have my liberty.
I believe you are, English. I believe you are. Goodbye, English.
I had no doubt that he reached the shore with ease, for he was an excellent swimmer. Would that I had a south wind, for I could have made for Cadiz. But the wind was from the northwest, and my way south into the unknown. The sea was calm and the wind fair, and I let my course follow the shore, so that after a day and a night I calculated I must be 150 miles to the south of Soleil and quite beyond the Emperor of Morocco's dominions. I sailed thus for several more days until my food and water were gone, and I was quite lost and my hope low.
A sail! It is a sail! Christian or Turk? What's your geese by the look of her? Ahoy there! Ahoy! Ahoy there!
I crowded on all the sail I could make and fired my fowling piece to alert their attention.
They're shortening sail and turning towards me. They have seen me! They have seen me!
And so I was delivered. It was an inexpressible joy to me, and I immediately offered all I had to the Portuguese captain, but he would take nothing, for he had delivered me on the same terms as he would be glad to be saved himself. I journeyed with him to the Brazils, where I settled and made my fortune, only to lose it again through my own willfulness.
So you see, Paul, if I escape before, I may do so again. Although I confess my resolve has waned considerable after attempting my canoe. I'm most vexed for want of a companion to assist my labours. One morning, while searching for a suitable tree to enlarge my dugout, I was surprised with seeing no less than 5 large canoes all on shore together on my side of the island, and the people who belonged to them all landed and out of sight. I crept to the brow of a small hillock overlooking my creek and spied with my perspective glass. No less than 30 savages in number, and they've a fire kindled. And to one side, 2 wretches looking most miserable. One of them is being led forward. He's been felled with a club. Oh! 2 others are cutting him open for their cookery. Oh! Abomination! As I watched in horror, the other victim, as I now perceived him, was left standing till they should be ready for him. Seeing himself a little at liberty, nature inspired him with hopes of life, and he started away from them. He runs with incredible swiftness. 3 of his fellows are following. Go on, my lad, go on! He's outstripping them. He's reached a creek. One now. He swims very fast, and his pursuers have reached the creek. One cannot swim and is turning back, but 2 continue. They're not as swift as their quarry. Oh, no. the fugitive has turned away from the shore and comes up the hill towards my castle. What am I to do? Am I called by Providence to save this creature's life? Well, if I do not, I may be discovered in my castle and overthrown. I was dreadfully frightened, but decided that I must intervene. Accordingly, I set off down the hill with all speed. He comes now. I let him get some distance beyond me and then hailed him.
Ahoy there! You lad!
Come here! Come here, I say! Do not be afraid. I will help you. I intend you no harm. Your enemies are upon us. Hold! Hold! Stand, I say, stand!
The first of his pursuers burst into the small clearing and stopped in surprise at the sight of me. I own I was a strange apparition, clad in goatskin jerkin, cap and shoes, and possessed of a great grey mane and beard. I was loath to use my gun and alert his fellows at the camp, and so rushed at him and knocked him down with the stock of my piece, just as his companion appeared. He stared at me in wonder.
Stand still!
I advanced a pace towards the second pursuer and perceived that he had a bow and arrow, and having observed the state of his fellow, was placing an arrow in his bow.
Stand still, and I will do you no harm. Now put down your bow and arrow, put it down, or I will shoot you. Oh.
I turned back to the savage I had saved and found him standing still and very frightened. I beckoned to him.
Come here. Come on. That's it. Bit nearer. Go on. I'm not going to hurt you. Come on. Come to me. The poor wretch is trembling with fear. I am not going to kill you. I have defended you from your enemies. That's better. Now come to Crusoe.
He advanced slowly towards me, bending down every 10 or 12 steps in token of acknowledgement. I smiled at him and looked pleasantly, but given the extremity of my apparel, this gave more fright than comfort. I beckoned him to come nearer still, which he did, and then kissed the ground, and taking me by the foot, placed it upon his head.
What's this? You swearing to be my slave forever?
Well, see, the pursuer I knocked down is coming to his senses. I raised my fowling piece, and my savage, for so I called him now, appeared very much afraid and took to trembling. He shook his head with great vigour and pointed to my sword, which hung naked at my side.
What? You want my sword? Here. Take it.
He took my sword and ran at his enemy and cut off his head. Most cleanly, no executioner could have done it better.
What's so funny? He's offering me the head. No! No, I do not want it. No, take it away. No! I'm not angry. I just do not want the head. We must bury them in case their fellows come looking for them.
I gestured to him and he understood, for he straightway dug 2 shallow graves in the sand with his hands and buried his enemies. He was most astonished by the one I had shot, and before burying him turned him first one way and then t'other, and looked at the small hole in the breast the bullet had made. Afterwards he took up the bow and arrows, and we returned to a grove close to my cave.
Here, bread, and a bunch of raisins to eat, see? Hmm? Now you. See? and water to drink?
You have a thirst in your flight.
That's good, eh? Now we will rest here and hide from your enemies. This is the first time I have sat in company these 28 years.
I now had the chance to consider my new companion and to speak with him, and although he did not understand me, yet it was most satisfying.
I shall call you Friday for the memory of your deliverance, for today is, by my reckoning, Friday, and you shall call me Master. You, Friday, the Master.
You fried. You fried.
Fried.
Good, 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 very good. Me, master. Master.
Master.
Excellent! Excellent! You are a comely, handsome fellow, Friday, with a good countenance. Not a fierce and surly aspect, but something very manly in your face. Yet there is much sweetness and softness and a great vivacity and sharpness in your eyes, especially when you smile and laugh. You are well made, with straight long limbs, tall and well shaped, and I would reckon about 25 or 6 years of age. And the colour of your skin is very tawny, a bright kind of a dun olive colour, which is something in it which is most agreeable. Well, I see you're very fatigued. Look, there's a great parcel of straw over yonder, see? And a blanket upon it. Well, I often sleep here myself. Lie down here and sleep, eh? Well, do not be afraid, Friday.
Friday.
Yes. You, Friday. Me, Master.
Master.
Yeah. Now, lie down and rest. He did as I suggested and went straight away to sleep, and slept all that day and on, until the next morning. I slept the night in my fortification with my ladder withdrawn, and when I awoke, I wondered if Friday would be gone, for the day of his deliverance seemed like a dream. Oh, Friday, you're still here. I have some breakfast for you. Goat's milk and bread. Now, I think I must find you some clothes, for it's unsettling to see you stark naked, and ungodly for you to be so. I returned to my cave and sorted out a few things and brought them back for him. I have some linen drawers which belong to the gunner of my ship. Here.
Master.
No, not on your head. Look, lad, like this, look, see? I put my leg through this hole, and then my other leg through that one. Now, you try. He took the drawers and struggled with them, for they were most foreign to him. But finally, he wore them. That's good. Your nakedness is covered. Now, here is a goatskin jerkin. It's an old one of mine, so it may be small. Here, put your arms through the holes like this. This he managed easily, although in truth it was a little small for him, but I resolved to enlarge it at my leisure and handed him a cap made of hair which he wore at a rake and was most pleased at his appearance. I must say you look very well and not unlike me. Pick up the bow and arrow, and you may carry my sword. Good. Now, follow me. We came to a vantage point, and I spied the beach where the savages had drawn up their canoes. Gone, so it would appear. It seems they rarely spend a night here. I'm curious and have a mind to get a fuller intelligence of them. There are two of us, both armed. Come, Friday. We marched down the hill past the place where Friday had buried his pursuers. I went on, but Friday stopped and became excited.
Master!
What is it? You want to dig them up? What for? Well, to eat them? No, I say. Do not be afraid, Friday. I mean you no harm, but I will not countenance that degeneracy. Leave them where they are. We continued on until we came to the stony foreshore where Friday's captors had held their feast. Look at this dreadful sight. Bones, half-eaten flesh, the ground covered in blood. Why do you smile, Friday? This is most dreadful, but it means little to you. Gather up the remains and make a pile of them. By gesture and demonstration, I communicated my desires, which Friday then carried out most easily. We made a great fire and burnt the remains all to ashes. As we watched the pyre, Friday in like manner explained how he had come to be a prisoner. His captors had brought over 4 prisoners to feast upon, and 3 of them were eaten up, and he was the 4th. There had been a great battle between his captors and the next king, of whom Friday was one of his subjects. Many prisoners were taken and carried off, so that they may be feasted upon as was done here. Your stomach still hankers after such flesh, Friday. I must teach you everything that is proper to make you useful, handy, and helpful. And so that you may distinguish good from evil, I must make you speak English, and so understand me when I speak. And so began my lessons. I set him to work beating some corn out and sifting it in the manner I used to do. And in a little time, Friday was able to do all the work for me as well as I could do it myself. I made a wooden frame with a door to my cave so that at night I could withdraw and be safe within, and he could sleep sheltered without. But I needed none of this precaution, for never a man had a more faithful, loving, sincere servant than Friday was to me. In time, he began to talk pretty well, and I began to have some use for my tongue again. Friday, you've harvested the corn quickly and diligently.
What do you want Friday to do now, master?
Well, there are 2 mouths to feed now instead of 1. So we need more corn.
Yes, master. I go now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
What are you doing?
I mark out larger piece of land. Plant more corn.
It needs to be worked and fenced and planted first.
I know, master. I go now. 6, 7, 8.
He's a hard-working and cheerful worker, and learns most swiftly. He was the aptest scholar that ever there was, except when it came to religion. Stop your work a while, Friday. Have some water.
I have not finished chopping this wood yet.
I want to talk to you about something, Friday. I want to tell you about my God and divine providence.
What is providence, master?
It was providence which made me the instrument to save your life, and who knows, your soul. Providence is the hand of God at work.
What is God, master?
God? God is the father of everyone and everything.
Ah, my father lived beyond the hills. Is he God?
No.
Friday not understand.
All right. Who made the sea, the ground we walk on, the hills, and the woods?
Old Ben Amuki, who lived beyond all.
Well, what is he like, this Ben Amuki?
Him very old. Older than sea, or land, or moon, or stars.
What happens to the people who die in your country? Do they go anywhere?
Yes, all go to Ben Amuki.
And those that are eaten up, do they go too?
Yes, master.
Does he speak to you, this Ben Amuki?
He speaks with the old men, high up in the mountains.
Friday, the great maker of all things is not Ben Amuki. It is my God who lives up there in the heavens, who gives all things to us and takes all things from us. He hears every word we utter.
Him much might.
Yes, Friday, him much might.
If your God hears everything beyond the sun, he needs must be a greater God than Ben Amuki.
Ben Amuki is a cheat, an evil spirit, product of the devil. He does not speak to your old men.
What is devil, master?
The evil one who, when the world was young, rebelled against God and now lives in the dark places of the world, plotting God's downfall.
You say your God is strong, fellow?
Yeah. He's all-powerful.
If God much strong, much might as the devil, why does he not kill the devil and make him do no more wicked? Why, master?
Well, that's a question.
Master, answer!
Oh, did you hear something over yonder, Friday? No matter how I tried, I could not get beyond Friday's obstruction. God knows I had more sincerity than knowledge in the poor creature's education, and I prayed to God that he would enable me to instruct him. I must acknowledge that in laying things open to Friday, I informed and instructed myself in many things I did not know or had not considered before.
Yeah.
grass and the bonny rowan tree are all growing bravely in the North Country.
This is the happiest time I've had on my island, Friday. You are my true friend and companion.
Friday happy too, Master.
Here we are. The summit of my mountain. On a clear day, you can see the great landmass to the west. There it is. See?
Oh, joy. Oh, glad. Oh, joy, Master.
Well, it makes you happy, Friday.
See my country, see my nation. Oh, joy.
Do you wish to go home?
This is my home, Master.
Do you wish yourself in your own country?
Oh, yes, Master. I'd be much glad to be there.
Well, what would you do there? Would you turn wild again?
No, Master.
Would you forget all that I've taught you?
No, Master.
Would you eat men's flesh again and be as savage as you were before?
No. Friday, tell them to live good, to pray God. Eat cornbread and goat flesh, no eat man again.
I don't believe you.
Why, Master, angry?
I am not angry.
Master, angry? Friday, not know why. Friday, sorry.
You have nothing to reproach yourself for.
Why, Master, angry?
I have no claim on you. But I have grown to depend on you. Would you go back to them?
I cannot swim so far.
You could go in a canoe.
Friday go if Master go with him.
Why, then they will eat up both of us.
Me tell them no. They no kill us. They willing learn.
Well, surely there's much danger in crossing the sea.
No. In morning, current and wind bring canoe here. In evening, take canoe back.
That's why the savages come in the morning and leave in the evening. It must be a tidal surge.
One day, sea bring white mans to our nation.
When I mean?
Yes, with whiskers like Master. Come in small boat, not canoe.
What became of them?
They dwell in my nation now.
They haven't been eaten up?
No, they fight in war as brother.
And they are there now, these white men?
Yes, still there.
White men like me? Spaniards or Portuguese, I expect. But together, we may be able to make the Caribbean islands. I must go to them.
Friday, come?
Yes, we will make a large canoe, and you will return to your nation, and I shall return to mine.
Friday, come with Master?
No, you must stay with your nation.
Here, Master. Take sword. Kill me now.
Why must I kill you, Friday?
Why you send Friday for? Kill Friday. No, send Friday away.
Did you not say you wanted to return to your nation?
Yes. We should both be there. Friday and Master.
I wish to join with the white men. That's all.
You do great good. Teach wild man to be sober. Tame man. Tell him pray God. Live new life. Now what, leave Friday? No!
Friday. I am but an ignorant man. And I have taught you all I know.
Not send Friday away.
All right. I swear I will not send you away.
We stay together?
Yes. We stay together. Where are you? It's all right, Paul. No need to be alarmed. I brought you outside to give thanks to Almighty God, this being the second anniversary of Friday's deliverance. And he's nowhere to be found. Friday! We shall just have to start without him, Paul. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Oh, Master! Master!
Where have you been, Friday?
I went to the beach to get turtle. Oh, bad, bad.
This is your day of Thanksgiving and you went to get a turtle. Why?
As a sacrifice to God, give thanks with turtle.
See? Let us pray.
No, Master, you know, see, I see.
What on earth are you talking about, Friday?
A boat, come to island.
Do you mean a canoe?
No. Come look, see from hill.
I followed Friday to a small rise and gazed out at the bay beneath and the ocean beyond.
There, Master!
You're right, Friday. It isn't a canoe. It looks like a longboat with a sail. It is. And
heavens.
What is it, Master?
Look. Standing off about a league, a ship lying at anchor. It looks like an English ship. After so long.
Master, look through glass?
Yes, my lady. It is. An English ship manned by my own countrymen. I never thought to see. Englishman Friday. Why do you look so somber?
Why did they come here? Savage man's come here. Do bad things. Why Englishman's come?
That's a good question. What business does an English ship have in this part of the world, far away from where the English have any traffic? And there be no storms to drive them hither.
Boat coming to shore, Master. You meet them?
No. We will return to our cave and arm ourselves. We will not declare our intention until we have spied theirs.
Get ashore. Bring our honored guests with you. Here, look not so glum, Captain. This be your new home.
I'll see you burn in hell, Will Fry.
Bolson Fry to you. Now get ashore. Look, lads. Our captain's lost his sea legs on account of them being bound together. You too, Mr. Mate. Don't keep your captain waiting.
Careful with them, Bolson.
Eh?
We agreed not to hurt him.
Cast them away to an island. That's what we agreed, Will.
You shut your row, Higgins. I know you and Tom Smith are windy about our enterprise. So you can stay here together. Look after the longboat for you. Trouble. The rest of you scurvy devils, get ashore. Take our prisoners with you.
There are 14 men altogether. 10 on shore, 2 captives and 2 left in the boat.
English man's eat prisoner like savage man's?
No, Friday. I do not think they mean to eat them, but I am afraid they mean to murder them.
They run round like savage man's?
It is the old way of sailors ashore. Drink rum and think only of today.
We wait, see what happened, Master?
Yes, Friday. There are too many to attack now. So we wait.
Here, have some rum, Swift.
Can we explore, Will?
You do what you like, lad. You're in charge now. Yeah, we all are.
What about our prisoners? Should we put a guard on them?
What for? Think they're going to get a Bow Street runner and arrest us?
The boatswain and his fellows have been gone a long time, Captain.
That they have.
What will they do with us?
Dead men tell no tales, Mr. Mate.
Surely they will not murder us. Will Fry swore he would not.
Boatswain Fry knows he will hang in chains as a mutineer if he is caught.
It's fearful hot. I wonder where they are.
They're all laid down to sleep, what with this heat and the rum they've consumed. Look at the longboat, Mr. Mate.
It's beached, Captain.
High and dry.
Oh, did you hear something? I heard something.
You there. Are you English?
They are come.
Hold on to your dignity, Mr. Mate. Yes, we are Englishmen. Who wants to know?
A friend you did not know you had.
He must be sent from heaven, then, for our condition is past the help of man.
All help is from heaven, sir, but if God had sent an angel to help you, he would have come better armed and better clothed than I. See for yourselves.
Great heavens, Lord.
Have you ever seen an angel wearing a goatskin jerkin and cap?
Who are you?
An Englishman who is disposed to assist you. I've 1 servant and some weapons. Now, what is your case?
I was commander of that ship. My men have mutinied against me. This is my first mate.
Have they any firearms?
They have 3 pieces. 1 left in the boat. They carry the others. Do you know where the brutes are?
They are asleep under a tree over yonder. We may kill them easily enough as they lie.
Better to take them prisoner, sir. Only Fry and Swift are desperate villains, but I believe the rest will return to their duty if they are secured.
It will be difficult. If I assist your deliverance, Captain, I insist on 2 conditions.
Name them, sir.
1, that while you stay on this island, you will not pretend to any authority here and be governed by my orders in all things.
Granted. And the second?
Oh, cut our bonds while you tell us, for pity's sake.
Come on, lads, stir yourselves. Look lively, you scurvy dogs. Captain Thompson?
They're not here, Boatswain.
Well, we tied them securely. They must be here.
Well, they are gone.
Smith and Higgins, Boatswain. That gun from the longboat.
And their weapon?
Gone too.
So that's the way of it. Those two dogs have turned the captain and the mate loose.
And that's not the worst of it, Boatswain. They've taken the fresh water and stove a great hole in the bottom of the boat.
What?
We're stranded then.
I'm awful thirsty.
Shut up for a moment. Let me think.
We could swim for it.
I can't swim. Anyhow, the ship's over a league away.
Was it? Does not sound like one of our lads.
Maybe the isle is enchanted after all.
Is the voice of a sprite?
Ah, of course it may be.
Over here, lads!
That's no sprite. That's the mate.
There's water here.
Oh, water.
There's water! Clear water!
What shall we do, Will?
We shall go towards the sound.
It could be a trap.
No, we're 10. They're 4. They have 1 weapon. We have 2. We shall fight and overwhelm them.
And drink their water.
Aye. Now, follow me. And stay together.
Hello! Hello, man! Over yonder lies cool water!
Water, lads! Water!
Water!
Friday and the mate have paid their part well. It'll be dark soon.
And time to make our move.
Are you ready, Captain? You know what to do. Fire 4 rounds and then rush them. Friday and the mate will attack their flank.
The first shot will be their signal. When you're ready, Captain.
I told Boatswain Fry he would burn in hell. I shall now dispatch him hence with a musket ball.
Their pollos a short engagement. 2 were killed, 3 wounded, and 2 threw down their swords in terror when they beheld Friday. Ah!
Throw down your weapons, lads. Your case is hopeless. Will Fry is dead, shot through the heart. 4 more lie wounded.
We may as well fight. We got nothing to lose now.
All who yield shall be shown mercy, save Swift.
Why not I?
You were intent on my destruction.
All right, then. I throw my sword down for myself upon your mercy.
And I, there is my sword. I cannot stand alone. What would happen to me?
You shall be hanged in the morning, Swift.
Oh, no. I beg you, Captain. Show me mercy.
I may not. You are not my prisoner. You are all prisoners of the governor of this island.
Governor? Who is this gentleman?
A most grave and upright Englishman with a company of 20 soldiers.
He may not hang me without a trial.
The rest shall have a trial when they are sent back to England.
That means hanging, for sure.
Our victory won. Friday led my new subjects to my camp. I instructed him to give them sustenance and then bring the captain to me in my cave.
I'll warrant they never saw a governor dressed like me, Captain.
They believe you have an army and a palace.
This cave is my palace, castle, workshop, and home.
The story of your captivity is most amazing, but that you should be furnished thus with all that you need is like a miracle.
It's the hand of Providence,
Master!
Captain.
Master! Master! Come quick!
What is it, Friday?
Ship fire gun!
Come, Captain.
We followed Friday to the edge of my fortification and looked down on the bay. The lights of the ship shone like tiny stars.
They're concerned for their comrades. We must return the signal.
Friday, go down to the shore with a lantern and fire your fowling piece.
Yes, Master.
Well, what next, Mr. Crusoe? Do you have a plan for the recovery of my ship?
How many are left aboard?
8, and the ship's boy.
How many can you depend on?
Higgins and Smith, and another 5 from the shore party. 7 in all.
That'll be enough. We shall repair the longboat and you will sail out to the ship. Your men will make as if you and the mate are still prisoners.
We shall have surprise on our side. And if we are successful, Mr. Crusoe, you will return to England.
Yes. Yes, I will.
And so our plan was executed. Most of the mutineers aboard were insensible with drink, and the assault was pressed most easily.
Two resisted to the end, but the rest surrendered and made a piteous sight, especially when their comrade Swift was hanged from the yardarm. The sight of his corpse made a grave impression on the other mutineers.
Mr. Crusoe? Are you here?
I'm in the anteroom, Captain, trying on my new clothes.
How do you like my ship?
Oh, it's most fine.
Aha, I see you've sampled my luxuries.
I have the wine and the cheese, Captain, and they are excellent.
Then why are you vexed, sir?
Hmm?
You look well with your hair cut and your new clothes.
Does any man wear shoes such as these without pain? Or such a collar without suffocation?
They are fine clothes, the finest I have.
Must they pinch and pull, sir?
It is not the fashion in England to wear a goatskin jerkin and hat. I see you have brought them aboard with you.
As relics, sir. Mementos of my stay.
Oh, your manservant is without. He wishes to speak with you.
Send him in, send him in.
A moment more of your time, Mr. Crusoe. Concerning the fate of the mutineers.
What do you desire, Captain? To take them back to England in chains and watch them hang?
For the most part, no. They are good men led astray. But if I let them aboard, I must take them back.
I think the governor may devise an answer to your problem, Captain. Now send in Friday.
I will see you later, Mr. Crusoe.
You may enter now, Friday.
Oh, Friday, you brought me Paul. How now, Paul? How now?
Oh, now.
Well, what do you think, Friday? Do I look fine?
Look very fine.
Why do you look so glum?
Master, go home. Leave Friday.
I made a bargain with the captain. In return for our help against his enemies, he agreed to obey me on the island and to give free passage back to England.
For you, Master?
For both of us. If you desire to come with me.
We swear never part.
And we never shall. We never shall.
Friday!
Friday, go with Master!
Dressed in my new finery, the captain introduced me as governor of the island. The mutineers begged me for permission to remain rather than return to execution. The captain pretended to deny them, and I to argue with him, which made them most grateful to me. I gave them provisions, some firearms, and an account of my survival, which included a map of the island. I bade them live honestly and humbly before God, reminding them I should in time return and judge them. And to this, they agreed most readily.
Unfurl the mainsail!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Set course east by northeast! We sail to England!
So, on the 19th of December, as I found by the ship's account, in the year 1686, I left my island. With Paul and my faithful servant Friday, I came safely home to my native shore, where I settled and in time came to record the strange and surprising adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, Mariner.
In Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe, dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers, Crusoe was played by Roy Marsden and young Crusoe by Tom Bevan. Friday was Lloyd Notice, the captain John Rowe, and Boatswain Fry Christopher Wright. Swift was Ewan Thomas, the captain's mate Gerard McDermott, and the sailors Brian Parr and Alistair Danson. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancarrow.